Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. And Brian's still doing his air drums during...
Long after the music stopped.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
It's still going on in my head.
I guess, okay. I thought it was
Black
my voice.
Balloon, baby. Great song.
Anyway, hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. Got Brian Myers in studio. And, of course, Ron at the board. And just wanted to just thank you guys for listening to us another week. And hopefully you won't regret it. So, hey,
I want to go home now.
You want to? Ron wants to go home. I'm done.
It's a great way to start the show.
No, hey, there was a unless you live under a rock or something, you realize there was a debate this week, the first of three, and it's fascinating to watch. You know, I go to Facebook after the debate and seeing what people have to say, and there's definitely a difference of opinion on how the candidates did. I think...
Really?
Yes.
How can this be?
I know. It's amazing how, you know, sometimes I have to wonder, are we all watching the same debate? I feel like I went into it with, since I like neither candidate... That was somewhat impartial.
No, you went into it looking for the entertainment value, which that's why we tuned in.
That's right. And I would have to say, on substance, as far as her ideas, Hillary Clinton was, you know, there wasn't much there that I could agree with or that I liked. And if I had to base it solely on issues... And I would say I didn't like what she had to say. As far as debate style and performance, I think Hillary Clinton won. She was
running away,
disciplined. She was prepared. Donald Trump, in my opinion, was not. I think we both agree that if at least with the first 20 minutes, if the debate ended after 20 minutes, Donald Trump would have been the winner.
No, we talked about that before we came on the air. It's the kind of thing where if you would have watched that first 20 or maybe even the first 30 minutes and you'd either, you know, left the room or shut the television off or change the channel, you'd say Donald Trump won. But from that point forward, he was an absolute train wreck.
Right. He was in a sweet spot the first 20 minutes talking about trade, talking about jobs, talking about the economy. And he went after her. He was aggressive. And then the tax returns came up, and he had a pithy reply at first. We'll get into some of that, but then the wheels fell off the bus, and the problem was, you know, winning the 20 minutes, first 20 minutes in a night. Well, the whole debate was 90 minutes, so unfortunately, what people caught at the very end is sometimes what sticks with them.
You mean like those incoherent rants?
Right, right. So, you know, the Trump campaign, they're claiming, oh, we won the snap polls, we won the online polls. Unfortunately, people don't realize internet bots could actually take over those online polls.
Internet bots?
Yes. Don't mean internet bots. Anything. Scientific polling, however, showed basically, well, the CNN or ORC poll, 62% thought Clinton won, 27% thought Trump won. Politico Morning Consult said Clinton won 49% said Clinton won, 26% said Trump won. Public policy polling was probably the best poll, which is strange since it's Democratic leaning for Trump. 51% said Hillary won, but 40% said Trump won.
I don't know how in the world you come up with 40%. Who actually watched the debate and said Trump wins.
I don't know either. Echelon Insights said 48% Clinton, 22% Trump. YouGov has Clinton winning by 27 points. Yeah. So he's basically losing to a 2-to-1 margin.
She ran away with it. She really did.
So there's this alternate reality that seems like the Trump camp has formed, and some Trump supporters have entered into. Folks, if you are a Trump supporter, it doesn't do you any good to claim that polls are skewed, to claim that he did a great job when he didn't. He may have been saying some things that you like, but here's the thing, and this is what I have to keep reminding people who said, well, he did that during the primaries, and that was all right. He turned out okay. The general electorate voting block, basically constituency, is not the same as the Republican primary constituency. There are a lot of undecided voters that aren't impressed with poor debate performances.
Well, you're right about that, of course, but at the end of the day, I wonder, because of the way our politics are now, I wonder if this really hurt him in the long run.
We'll see. I mean, here's the thing. I think this race is so tight right now that I think a bad debate performance can tip it one way or the other. Well, now, he can turn it around. Remember, Romney, you know, in 2012, Romney had a great first debate. And mm-hmm, everybody basically acknowledged that Romney cleaned Obama's clock.
He did.
Obama made some adjustments. You mentioned, you know, earlier that also he had Candy Crowley in his pocket, which, okay, that doesn't explain the third debate on foreign policy where he really, he tanked. And, and this is something he should have been, you know, he should have just hammered Obama on Benghazi, and he didn't do it.
I think by the third debate, the Romney campaign was playing not to lose rather than to win.
Right.
They were thoroughly convinced because the polling at that point had showed that they had a strong majority of the independent voters, so they played not to lose, and they weren't aggressive, and they should have pounded Obama on Benghazi.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Speaking of which, the Donald didn't even bring it up the other night.
No, he didn't. And I know Trump supporters are like, well, he wasn't asked about it. This was a free-flowing debate. There wasn't tight rules. I mean, the candidates were allowed to engage with one another, and Lester Holt wasn't reining them in. So he could have thrown that in. There were probably numerous opportunities he could have brought Benghazi up, and he didn't.
I suppose we better get to the clips, yeah. Otherwise we're going to run out of time.
Definitely. So let's see. Probably won't be able to get to all these. Trump said, we'll play the longest one first. Clip number two. Trump says he was never for the Iraq war. And this was an answer where it's like, just stop. Shh. Go ahead.
So you had supported the war in Iraq before the invasion. What makes your judgment?
I did not support the war in Iraq.
2002.
That is a mainstream media nonsense put out by her because she, frankly, I think the best person in her campaign is mainstream media.
My question is,
I was against the war in Iraq, just so you put it out.
The record shows
that I'm right. When I did an interview with Howard Stern, very lightly, first time anyone's asked me that, I said, very lightly, I don't know, maybe, who knows, essentially. I then did an interview with Neil Cavuto. We talked about the economy is more important. I then spoke to Sean Hannity, which everybody refuses to call Sean Hannity. I had numerous conversations with Sean Hannity at Fox, and Sean Hannity said, and he called me the other day, and I spoke to him about it.
Yes,
he said, you were totally against the war because he was for the war.
Why is your judgment better than
that? That was before the war started. Sean Hannity said very strongly to me and other people, he's willing to say it, but nobody wants to call him, I was against the war. He said, you used to have fights with me because Sean was in favor of the war. And I understand that side also, not very much because we should have never been there. But nobody called Sean Hannity. And then they did an article in a major magazine shortly after the war started, I think in 04, but they did an article which had me totally against the war in Iraq. And one of your compatriots said, you know, whether it was before or right after, Trump was definitely, because if you read this article, there's no doubt.
All right,
I'll ask the press, if somebody would call...
Here's the thing, folks. Nobody cares! I mean, seriously, nobody cares whether he was against the war or for the war. It doesn't really matter where we're at in the Middle East today.
Well, and you don't answer the question by going into a semi-coherent rant.
Right.
Sean Hannity. Publication. Sean Hannity. Nobody followed all that.
No, it's like, what? That makes no sense. And Howard Stern, actually, I saw a link where he says, well, he kind of did, but he didn't really back him up. And as far as, you know, like Howard Stern's a credible source anyway, Sean Hannity's been a Trump shill since, like, the start of the primary. So how, you know, can you really trust Sean Hannity to be a reliable source? No. So it's just ridiculous. And it didn't really matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter where he lands on the Iraq war, because it does it really change how he's going to approach it now?
As a matter of fact, I think Lester Holt was trying to set that up to go someplace else.
Right.
It's like, okay, you were against it back then, so therefore. Well, we never got to the therefore because we're too busy talking about Sean Hannity.
Yeah.
And some other incoherent business that the American people couldn't follow.
Right.
It's nuts.
Oh.
But anyway.
And also, Trump has a winning temperament. Let's go ahead and play clip 3.
Oh, this is rich.
What I said. Why is your judgment any different than Mrs. Clinton?
Well, I have much better judgment than she does. There's no question about that. I also have a much better temperament than she has. You know, I have a much better. She spent, let me tell you, she spent hundreds of millions of dollars on an advertising. You know, they get Madison Avenue into a room. They put names. Oh, temperament. Let's go after. I think.
Anyway.
Do you sometimes get the impression this guy has not been diagnosed?
Yes, I do. When people laugh, boy. Okay, people, Donald, people were not laughing with you. They were laughing at you when you said that.
Well, they were incredulous. They were absolutely incredulous.
It's like, how could you possibly say that? With Hillary Clinton, all her faults, temperament is not one of them.
Well,
typically.
Publicly.
I know there's been some.
The rumor, I would say, it's more than a rumor. She apparently privately is an absolute volcano. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
But publicly, is without a doubt, she's very calm, very under control. She showed that the other night in the debate.
Right. Other than you could tell, it's like I'm pressing a button. I'm just gonna sit here, listen to him, and smile.
And occasionally kind of dance around a little bit.
I mean, it's just like, you know, it's. He was like walking right into what she was like. Yes, he's doing exactly what I would hope he would do.
His staff had to be backstage banging their heads against the walls of the staging area.
I would say Kellyanne Conway probably. She's got the worst job in the world right now, I think. Because, well, yeah, I don't envy her.
Right.
I think she's helped to make some good adjustments, but again, it's Trump will be Trump, and it's kind of hard to constrain him, and you can't really change who he is.
This is true.
So you can change messaging all you want, but it doesn't essentially change that you got a bad candidate that's running.
Next up,
yeah. Where we at? Hey, we have, let's see, we'll play one from Hillary. We haven't heard from Hillary yet. Clip 4.
That is just not accurate. I was against it once it was finally negotiated and the terms were laid out. I wrote about that in...
You called it the gold standard.
You called it
the gold standard of trade deals. You said it's the finest deal you've ever seen.
No.
And then you heard what I said about it, and all of a sudden you were against it.
Well, Donald, I know you live in your own reality, but that is not the facts. The facts are, I did say, I hoped it would be a good deal, but when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for... I concluded it wasn't. I wrote about that.
So is it President Obama's fault? Is it President Obama's fault?
Even announced. Look, there
Secretary,
are
Secretary, is it President there, Obama's fault?
There are
Because he's pushing it.
There are different views about what's good for our country, our economy, and our leadership in the world.
So that was probably one of, again, Trump's better
It was actually quite fantastic. Now, she got a one-liner off in the middle of it and got some laughs.
Yeah.
Because he does live in his own reality.
Right.
But he did. He nailed her. And she can't get out of this. She was before that trade deal, before she was against it.
Right, right. And let's see. Oh, we got to play clip 7. I think we've got enough time for that. Donald had a good reply to the tax return.
We have a situation in this country that has to be taken care of. I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes. When she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted, as soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her.
So email. It's negotiable.
Okay. So again, he started off well, and then it just, if he just would drop it, and now then he had to get into what the lawyers say. The fact is, he can release his tax returns even while the audit's going on. The IRS has even said.
But you're spot on, Shane. His biggest problem is he can't just make his point and then shut up.
Right. Yeah, make your point, move on. Unless you got some additional material to say, but that's a preparation thing. Anyway.
Preparation?
Get, go
with
figure.
With the Donald?
Yeah, I know.
Are you kidding me?
He needs a better second debate and a third debate if he's going to turn this around. I'm afraid the tide might be turning against him.
I think so.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
It may be.
Christianity is under attack from the LGBT movement, Planned Parenthood, and even Islam.
As the church intersects with culture and society, we want to prepare you to be able to respond to a culture that is often hostile to the Christian faith.
So 99.3 is partnered with Caffeinated Thoughts Radio to assemble an event unlike any other.
At this Worldview Conference, we want to prepare students and adults to effectively engage the hostile culture we face every day.
I'd like to encourage you to attend the third annual Caffeinated Thoughts briefing on Saturday, October 15th.
So come to the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing and hear from experts such as Dr. Calvin Beisner, Dr. Robert Gagnon, Mike Ahmed, and Sue Thayer.
Register today. Go to ctbriefing2016.com. That's ctbriefing2016.com.
I hope to see you at the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing on October 15th, brought to you by American Principles Project,
Providence Industrial Electronics Repair,
The Mission Cup,
and The Truth, 99.3.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold, a modern woodman of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, we have a very special guest on the line. He's going to be a speaker at the upcoming Caffeinated Thoughts briefing on October 15th. Mark your calendars, October 15th. At Johnston Lions Club. Go to ctbriefing2016.com to get registered. Dr. Robert Gagnon is an associate professor of New Testament at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, and he's taught there since 1994. He's the author of The Bible and Homosexual Practice, Texts and Hermeneutics, and a co-author of Homosexuality and the Bible, two views. And welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Dr. Gagnon.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brian and Shane.
So, I first thing I wanted to ask you is, which view of the two views do you hold?
Wow, that is a tough, hard-hitting question at the beginning. Well, at the risk of taking a risk here, I hold the what is commonly called the traditional view, but really is quite clearly the scriptural, the one and only scriptural view.
Okay.
That is that there is a male-female foundation for marriage and thus for all sexual practice, and that is regarded within Scripture as not merely a minor matter, but one of the core values in terms of ethics, and the core value in terms of sexual ethics.
Dr. Gagnon, the LGBTQ movement was able to make huge social and legal gains, and they did it with breathtaking speed. And I really thought that these transgender bathroom laws and also the sports team accommodations that have accompanied all this would slow them down, but it really hasn't. In your estimation, how did this all happen?
Well, I think we largely have to blame heterosexuals, at least in the sexual revolution of the 60s, 70s, and following.
Mm-hmm.
And we have failed in many respects in terms of marriage longevity, marriage monogamy, restricting sex to marriage, and not allowing what is commonly understood to be fornication in the church. So consequently, when you give ground on restricting sex to marriage, when you give ground on marital longevity, not nowadays, if you're willing to commit to a long-term relationship that is satisfactory, it's
mm-hmm.
not long-term, it is lifelong, according to Jesus.
Right.
And at the same time, marital fidelity, that is marital monogamy. And along with that, of course, is the whole problem of pornography, so the thought life. So in so many different ways, we have made concessions heterosexually, which in order to alleviate consciences,
mm-hmm.
have caused some people to make acceptances and allowances for even more extreme forms of sexual behavior in order to give themselves a personal pass or loved ones.
I mean, there are a number of evangelicals on the left who are embracing the movement called Red Letter Christianity, and an argument I hear, or a statement I hear from people who advocate LGBT agenda, will say, well, Jesus didn't have anything to say about homosexuality. How would you respond to that?
Well, first I would say get off the red letter kick, because the Jesus did send emissaries, and those emissaries, the apostolic witness to Jesus, in Jesus's own understanding, provide an authoritative witness in the post-resurrection period. So that's a major problem. If they want to go with a red letter edition, then they have to accept the fact of Jesus's own confirmation of the apostolic witness. In addition to that, Jesus himself is very clearly opposed to homosexual practice. Now people will say, well, he didn't say anything explicit about that. He didn't have to. He also didn't say anything explicit about incest. But I'm quite sure that there's no doubt about the fact that Jesus is opposed to, for example, sexual relationships between a man and his mother, mm-hmm. even if it's intended as an adult, long-term committed union. And there's also no question about an even more severe offense, bestiality, even though he had nothing to say about that either. When Paul dealt with the case of the incestuous man at Corinth in 1 Corinthians 5, he didn't hit his head and say, WWJD, what would Jesus do? I have to confess complete ignorance on this question because I don't have an explicit saying on man-mother incest. Well, that's really, you know, you rightly should have laughed at that because that's just frankly absurd. The view of Scripture on incest and on homosexual practice is completely clear from the get-go. In the Old Testament, what they would have understood as the Hebrew Bible or the Septuagint. Absolutely no doubt about that. And there's no need to further refine the point that you really shouldn't have sex with your mother, and you really shouldn't have sex with a person of the same sex. How many people have actually heard a sermon on either why you shouldn't have sex with your mother A, or B, why you shouldn't, well, I guess now you would hear a sermon perhaps about why you shouldn't have sex with somebody of the same sex, but you would never have heard of that before the 80s.
Right.
And we still don't hear the one about incest. We don't conclude from that that pastors have some sort of secret acceptance for incest. We rather conclude that it's such a severe infraction of sexual norms that to have to devote a sermon at all to it is already a defeat for the church.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with regard to Scripture, right? You don't have to talk at length about why you shouldn't commit incest. We should thank the Corinthians, because if they didn't have such a case, then maybe people would be promoting the fact that incest is okay, because incest isn't mentioned in the New Testament otherwise. And the same thing, why you don't have to talk a lot about why no homosexual practice. It's regarded as one of the foundational of sexual offenses. That is that the first differentiation created among human beings is between sex or gender.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understood from the get-go that a complementary sexual pair is required, and that a person of the same sex cannot fake complementarity, cannot be a fake counterpart to a person of the same sex. So this is understood from Genesis, all throughout the entire Hebrew Bible, all throughout the witness of the New Testament. The reason why you don't have to have, for example, in Old Testament laws differentiating between good and bad forms of homosexual practice, is because all of the homosexual practice is regarded as a severe offense, regardless of whether it's consensual or committed. And what Jesus did is he actually then took that standard, and he said, I'm going to develop a principle based on that, limiting the number of partners in a sexual union to two, whether at any one time, no polygamy, or serially, no revolving door of divorce and remarriage. And he took the key text from Genesis 1:27, male and female God made them, in Genesis 2:24, for this reason a man may become joined to his woman, and the two become one flesh. And he said, look, this provides the foundation for sexual ethics. There, God deliberately ordained two primary sexes, male and female, man and woman, for sexual union. Anything else is absolutely unacceptable, and on the basis of defining sexuality with these two primary sexes, there's a principle that one can extrapolate about the number of persons allowable in a sexual union, too, because there are two primary sexes.
Right.
We know that that was Jesus' point, because we also have a sectarian Jewish group a century before Jesus making the same point about why there should be no polygamy in their midst, because God made us male and female.
You listen to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Dr. Robert Gagnon. Dr. Gagnon, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, too, but I think there's you mentioned fornication, but that word fornication in the Greek implies a much broader range of offenses than just what people, I think, today think it means, right?
Correct. It actually sometimes is translated fornication. The word is porneia, and it refers to all forms of sexual immorality. And people say, well, what would those be? Well, it's quite clear when you look at Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20, that sort of kicks the whole thing off. But there's sort of a priority order in terms of the most severe sexual offenses. Worst of all, bestiality, you're moving across species. Then homosexual practice, because you are rejecting a foundation established right from the creation of man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then incest, then adultery, then sex with prostitutes, and fornication. That's quite well understood. All Jews understood this. All early Christians understood this. There was no debate on the point.
Dr. Gagnon, earlier I had mentioned that I thought that the transgender bathroom laws and all of this business about sports teams having to accommodate people that were in the midst of transitioning, I really thought that society would say, whoa, we might be able to swallow the notion of same-sex marriage, but we're not prepared to have this going on where we have to open up our bathrooms in this regard. How is it that gender became disconnected from biology, and why was that subsequently so easy for society, apparently, to accept? And by the way, what is gender?
Well, there are a lot of people in society that like to define gender different from birth sex. and understand gender as whatever you want to define yourself to be, sexually speaking, irrespective of the biology. And that's an understanding I think we should reject, because it's just patently absurd. It's like recently the story they had of a man who now identified as a woman, was in a marital union in Ecuador, I think it was, to a woman who identified as a man, and they had a baby. Wow, this is amazing, because this man had a baby. No.
Yeah.
This man is still a woman, quite clearly, biologically, and it's really not surprising when you get together a person who is a real man and a person who is a real woman. Guess what? If you have intercourse, you can have a baby. And the fact that
shock
they
of
think
shocks.
That, right, shock of shocks, right? It's like there's no great mystery involved here. What the mystery is that people can't realize that biology is definitive here in terms of defining sexuality. But the sort of the it has gone even quicker than I thought, and the door is open largely because of the issue of homosexuality, because they've allowed people to think of their sexual counterpart as somebody who is already them, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the logic right. of a heterosexual union, the two halves of the sexual spectrum unite into a single sexual whole. Well, then what's the logic of a homosexual union? It's basically two half males become a whole male, two half females become a whole female. They view their sexual identity as only half what it actually is in relation not to the only other sex that exists, but in relation to their own birth sex. And so that's already been a diminishment or dishonoring of the stamp of biology on their being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's opened the door to completely obliterate any connection between biology and gender identity.
We just have a couple minutes left, and I want to kind of get us back to or talk about a little bit briefly, where does the church go from here now that we our culture has slid this direction?
I think the church has to get back to Jesus, and Jesus gets us back to creation in the appeal to the Genesis text. So what we have to realize is that we have to buck up on the whole area of sexual ethics across the board. Pastors need to now begin regularly teaching about sexual ethics. You know, one of the things that's striking when you look at Paul, who operated in a Gentile milieu, unlike Jesus, who operated in a Jewish milieu, who could pretty much assume general acceptance of the sexual norms and just clear up the remaining loopholes, that is, with regard to divorce, remarriage for men, and with regard to the interior life, which, you know, what you may think. You don't even get a pass in what you think. And for Paul, he could not count on just closing those loopholes. He had to deal with sexual ethics across the board in a Gentile context.
That's
one
right.
of the first things he did when he talked with his Gentile converts to say, okay, if we got the idolatry questions squared away, only worship the God and our Lord Jesus Christ, once you get that squared away, the very next issue is sex. And that was second on his plate, and that's why whenever he gives his vice or offender list, it's always in either order, idolatry and sexual immorality are the things that he's prescribing. Sometimes he even puts sexual immorality first over idolatry, but it's always one, two, and for either of those categories. And we got to get back to that and emphasize the importance of sexual ethics in the church.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gagnon. We're looking forward to having you come to the Caffeinated Thoughts Briefing. Remember, again, that's go to ctbriefing2016.com. Dr. Gagnon, where can they find out more about you?
Go to my website, www.robgagnon.net.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Gagnon.
Appreciate
Thanks
it. We'll
me.
See you in October.
Okay. Bless you.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
Okay, it's time for our news segment, otherwise known as News You Can Use. First up, from the Christian News Network, Edmonton, Canada. It's Edmonton, Alberta. Canada.
Yes.
A Canadian pastor is standing firm after being ordered to allow gay-straight alliances to be formed at his Christian schools. Now, what a gay-straight alliance is, I guess, is sort of a club.
A student club. Yeah, we got them here in the United States.
Okay. According to reports on September 2nd, Alberta Education Minister David Egan sent a letter to Brian Coldwell, the chairman of the Independent Baptist Christian Education Society and pastor of New Testament Baptist Church. The letter demanded that he allow the alliances at his two schools as per provincial law. Coldwell runs Meadows Baptist Academy and Harvest Baptist Academy in Parkland County. Earlier this year, Egan sent a letter to school boards throughout the province advising that officials must draft and submit policies by the end of March surrounding how they would accommodate homosexual and transgender students, which seems to be a bit more than merely the club.
Right.
The Gay-Straight Alliance. But Coldwell told CBC News that he would not comply. "I have a duty as a pastor to protect the flock of God," he said. "And there is no way under heaven I'm going to allow gay activists to come in here and basically undermine our ministries and our religious freedoms or confuse and corrupt our children. To be able to come into religious institutions, Christian schools, churches, and demand that they set up their GSA clubs and have a platform to advance what I would call anti-Christian, hostile, liberal, secular values that really undermine our Christian faith," Caldwell said. Therefore, Egan sent Coldwell a letter this month laying down a deadline of 2 weeks to send written assurance that gay-straight alliances would be allowed at his school. Coldwell again refused, and instead, Egan received a letter from Coldwell's attorney. "They did not change their position," Egan told reporters on Monday. "They did not give us any indication that they would provide written assurance that they would allow students to form a gay-straight alliance."
Don't think that this can't happen in the United States. That's all I have to say.
That's exactly right. Coming soon to a school near you.
If you want to see where we're going as a nation, watch Canada, watch Europe.
England, yeah. Yeah. Okay, next up, USA Today. In the 34-year history of USA Today, the editorial board has never taken sides in the presidential race. Instead, we've expressed opinions about the major issues and haven't presumed to tell our readers, who have a variety of priorities and values, which choice is best for them. Because every presidential race is different, we revisit our no endorsement policy every 4 years. We've never seen reason to alter our approach until now. This year, the choice isn't between two capable major party nominees who happen to have significant ideological differences. This year, one of the candidates, Republican nominee Donald Trump, is, by unanimous consensus of the editorial board, unfit for the presidency. From the day he declared his candidacy 15 months ago through this week's first presidential debate, Trump has demonstrated repeatedly that he lacks the temperament, knowledge, steadiness, and honesty that America needs from its presidents.
Later on, they also made it clear that this was not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton either. It says there was not a unity on the editorial board to endorse her. So
I would hope not.
Yeah. So I think that's remarkable. And I know people, Trump supporters, they're liberal, And they are left leaning, but I think it's noteworthy that they typically stay out. They don't make endorsements that they would come out and say this. And it's amazing that there's been a number of actual newspaper endorsements rejecting both Trump and Clinton and have gone with Gary Johnson instead.
Yep.
Mainly because, not that, you know, he doesn't have problems, but he at least seems so trustworthy. He doesn't have the corruption.
Yeah, that's just it. Forgive me, but to my left-leaning friends out there, I know you love a lot of the positions Mrs. Clinton takes, but this woman has proved, I don't necessarily want to call her a pathological liar, but she clearly is a liar. I don't even want to hear it. If you want to debate me on that, I don't even want to hear it. I won't entertain it. It's obvious. It is evident as it could be. She's a liar. You cannot have someone as untrustworthy as she is as our president either.
Right.
Just saying. All right, next up. This is from the New York Times. The reports to the police had one thing in common with the circus act involving an improbable number of clowns emerging from a small car. This one could actually come from, you know, being or being our next segment. They just kept coming and coming and coming across multiple states. Clowns in vans, clowns in the woods, clowns lurking in the shadows, clowns chasing people or doing crimes. But in recent weeks, steady police work has turned the news around with 12 people facing charges of making false reports or threats or chasing people, the authorities said. Other cases seem attributable to children with overactive imaginations or teenagers pulling pranks and others with their own reasons for adding to the hysteria. At least one death has been linked to a clown hoax. The first reports of unusual clown sightings surfaced late in August in Greenville County, South Carolina, with stories that the costumed figures were offending children. Offering children money to lure them into the woods, or were lingering in places and giving residents the heebie-jeebies. From there, the reports became a contagion, with sightings claimed in at least six other states.
Yeah.
Even as police were unable to verify the reports, they still proliferate.
My daughter down in Hannibal says they're hearing stuff even locally about this. It's, you know, clowns. I mean, as if they're not creepy enough.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Crazy.
Next up from Reuters. The U.S. Supreme Court opens its new term on Monday in uncharted territory, with a vacancy on the bench on a presidential election day now certain for the first time since Abraham Lincoln won re-election in 1864 at the height of the Civil War. While the eight justices will start to hear oral arguments on a range of issues including religious rights, insider trading, and intellectual property, attention will be focused on the November 8th presidential election that will determine who will get to replace Justice Antonin Scalia, who died on February 13th. In Lincoln's time, Chief Justice Roger Taney, author of the notorious pro-slavery Dred Scott decision, died in October 1864, just weeks before the election. After Lincoln won re-election, he appointed the anti-slavery Salmon Chase as Chief Justice in December 1864. That tipped the ideological balance of the court in Lincoln's favor, according to legal historian Paul Finkelman, who teaches at the University of Saskatchewan College of Law in Canada. So we got a Canadian historian here cluing us in on what our history is. But
interesting.
Kudos real quick to our own Charles Grassley for standing firm on this.
Absolutely.
Quite frankly, I thought the Republicans would roll over on this.
And he was definitely demonized during the... I was at a Clinton rally.
That's right. You were in amongst the...
Heard it. Someone said, if Clinton wins, she should replace Merrick Garland with Barack Obama on the court. Now, wouldn't that be a kick in the pants?
There's a lot of discussion in that regard.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
On that dreadful thought, we're going to...
We got to listen to happy music.
Oh, boy.
Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kids.
You can't afford to turn the other cheek, but you need to negotiate with the other party. How do you deal shrewdly without abandoning your Christian virtues? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Maybe haggling is distasteful for you because you act less Christian, and you see the other party as one to be conquered. Admittedly, not characteristics consistent with showing unconditional love to your neighbor. But consider this. Focus on the stewardship responsibilities you have as a manager or leader. Responsibility for resources and love for those under your care are wholesome motivations. And concerning your neighbor, consider the golden rule. You want to deal with someone you trust, so set the stage by acting like someone the other party can trust by focusing on the Christian virtues that build it. If you need help with a negotiation, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or visit online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Just want to remind you again, the Caffeinated Thoughts Briefing 2016.
Brief us on the briefing.
It's coming up Saturday, October 15th.
Briefly.
This is a Christian worldview conference for students and adults. We're talking about, as the church intersects with their society and culture, how should Christians individually and the church collectively respond to things like the rise of ISIS and Islamic terrorism, including homegrown terrorism, to the LGBTQ agenda and those who promote it, to the growing threat to our religious liberty, to the abortion industry and the culture of death our courts continue to defend, to a culture that's increasingly hostile to our faith and biblical truth. We are bringing in people like Cal Weisner, like you heard last week, and then Dr. Robert Gagnon that you heard second segment, as well as other speakers. This is going to be at the Johnston Lions Club. Go to ctbriefing2016.com and make sure you get registered. Because if you wait till October 14th, you can get registered still. You can go at the pay at the door. But we may not be able to guarantee a meal. So you need to make sure
you
get
it
done.
Folks, and it's Smokey D's Barbecue, okay?
Yeah, you don't want to miss lunch.
You don't want to miss lunch. So make sure you get signed up by October 13th. Okay, and now we've come to Ron's favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet. You know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
There's a little lag there, Ron. What's that gap? A little slow on the draw.
I didn't think there was any kind of gap there.
Mind the gap.
All right. This one was submitted by Debbie Myers. She takes the blame for this.
You're blaming your wife?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, after all, she...
It's probably going to be the best story we've heard.
Police are on the lookout for a brazen thief who broke into a YMCA in Riverside County through the ceiling. And stole cash from a cash register. Okay. The trouble is this. Neither the cash nor the cash register were real. Security footage captured the man kicking through the ductwork in the ceiling of the YMCA Child Development Center in Indio, California. He then drops to the floor to break into a cash register. He steals all the money inside before making a daring escape out the door. There's just one problem. The cash register in question is a children's toy filled with play money. The Indio Police Department believes this might not be the first acoustic ceiling tile crushing caper this cat burglar has sunk his claws into. Oh, man, who wrote this?
Wow.
Thieves tend to have specific MOs. With stuff that they follow and stuff that they are comfortable with. They don't get caught doing it once. And then they figure, hey, it's a tried and true method. And then they stick to it, explains IPD Sergeant Dan Marshall.
Well,
how would you like to be that dude? He breaks into the place and then he makes his escape. He stops at the neighborhood convenience store to get himself a well-deserved, you know, Slurpee or whatever. Pulls out his wad of cash, and it's all play money.
Monopoly money. What the heck?
I'm like,
Well, first of all, the fact they're breaking into a child development center. Hello?
He kind of should saw that one coming almost.
Yeah, but do you think maybe he was trying to get into the YMCA proper and just came down through the ceiling in the wrong spot? Just saying.
Still.
Yeah.
I can't imagine YMCAs have tons of cash.
That's a good point.
There you go.
Because I think maybe probably a lot of their membership probably pays by check, I would imagine. I don't know. I just think if he was breaking in their bank account, that would probably be a different story. But
well, you know, lots of times we get these kinds of stories in this segment because the American criminal is sometimes not terribly cerebral. Let's just put it that way.
That's right.
You're saying they're not smart?
Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We will give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. Thank you, sweetie, for this submission.
And we give you the total credit, Debbie. This was great. See you next week, everybody.
Take care.